Local taxpayers will have to pay a big chunk of the city's new deal for Lot J. At the same time, you, the taxpayers, say you're willing to pay more for better schools. And there's an emu on the loose on the city's west side. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, the city's Coming Out Day event goes virtual, how you can be part of it. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a jam-packed week in the news, we welcome A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal is here. Hi, Tim.
It's good to emo.
Regular contributor Fred Matthews. Hi, Fred.
Only pay for what you need.
Absolutely. And journalist Claire Goforth rounds out our foursome. Hi, Claire.
Good morning.
We're all getting a little punchy here. Things are just getting crazier by the week, but we'll try to keep it together as we talk about the news. Lots to talk about. Join us. We'll go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937 to call into the show. First this hour, though, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers, with 24 deaths reported in this area Thursday. Northeast Florida has now recorded 83 deaths from COVID-19 in the last 7 days. That is the most recorded in 1 week since the pandemic began. Now, if you are interested in getting tested for coronavirus, here's a note for you. On Monday, a free walk-up COVID testing site at the Legends Center is relocating. It will be moved to the Lincoln Villa Senior Center on Kings Road. Now, this temporary move is being made to thoroughly sanitize and prepare the Legends Center for its use as an early voting station. Early voting starts Monday, October 19th, so that's just over a week away. With all of that news covered, we want to talk about some other big stories from the week now, beginning with what leads us off. It's you, the taxpayers. You're going to be on the hook for millions to pay for the big deal between Shad Khan's Jaguars and Mayor Lenny Curry's administration. They have come to terms on a $445 million mixed-use project they're planning for Lot J. That's the empty parking lot next to the Jaguars Stadium and Daly's Place. Public dollars will pay for about half of this. There's going to be another live music venue, residential, office, hotel, and entertainment complex. They're calling it the Live District. Now, we want to know your thoughts about this. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. Our Facebook page is open. Let's begin with you, Tim Gibbons. By the way, as Shad Khan strikes this deal with the city, he's also putting his yacht, the Kismet, up for sale. No word if those proceeds will go toward the paying for some of this big new project for Jacksonville. I'm kidding around a little bit.
The jokes come down and was right themselves, yes.
Exactly. What are your thoughts on the Lot J deal?
Lot J is interesting. I mean, it's one of those projects that's been going on for several years, as Jacksonville has wanted to have. It has these projects that just you know, keep on being proposed and keep on being discussed and never actually coming to fruition. And I think that's the big question with this one of, you know, will it happen is obviously the issue. It's a lot cheaper to do renderings than it is to actually break ground. I think everybody knew from the get-go that this would involve a heavy taxpayer lift. There is a discussion or an argument to be asked of, if the market cannot bear it, is this something that the city should put that much money into? But it's clear to pretty much everybody that you're not going to get a big project like this without a heavy dose of public support.
Sure. And this is typically how these public-private partnerships have been done with these developments across the country. That said, Claire...
Well, actually, not kind of. And that is the interesting thing.
Okay.
Sorry, didn't mean to break in there. But a project like this, I mean, you look at Tampa where they have a similar sort of project. You look at other big projects like this, they oftentimes don't have a huge amount of public money. Stadium rebuilds are usually totally, a taxpayer on the hook sort of thing. But, you know, it is not uncommon, but it is also not uncommon for projects of this size to be done without this amount of civic support.
Okay. And Claire Goforth, because of that, there has been some pushback from some of the taxpayers out there. They don't like the idea of having to pay for a new development in this pandemic and recession when Shad Khan is such a wealthy man. That's really some of the feedback we've been getting about this. The other side of the argument is that downtown needs to be developed more robustly. But there's controversy around this.
Well, certainly. I mean, Shad Khan, according to Forbes, is the 66th richest American with a net worth of $8 billion. I mean, certainly $450 million, which is the total cost of this development, is a significant sum, but it is one that he can afford. And, I mean, we are in the middle of a pandemic. We are announcing one of the largest public incentive plans in the history of Jacksonville. While so many people have lost their jobs, they've lost income, their families struggling to feed their children. And Jacksonville has a lot of needs that have gone long unaddressed, infrastructure needs and various other things that we as a city maybe consider a more important priority than downtown development. Although, to be fair, downtown has lost many businesses in recent years. I mean, memorably, the Landing. And we're going around this basically riverfront full of lawns. So I think that people would like to see something go on down there. But the question is, if these developments are profitable, then why can't the billionaire who wants to be behind it fund more of it? And why are we offering him this enormous and really sweetheart of a deal where, I mean, we're even loaning him the money? I mean, that's pretty outrageous in some people's minds. I mean, it's a balancing act, and what we've seen out of City Hall on this is kind of like an attitude as though if you question it, you're anti-development. If you want to have a conversation about whether or not this particular package makes sense, then you're just the hater of all things that make Jacksonville better. And that's not really an honest conversation in many people's minds.
Fred Matthews, some city council representatives have said they embrace the deal overall, but they want a commitment by Shad Khan to keep the Jaguars in Jacksonville through the life of the deal, to not play more home games out of the country. What about that part of this?
They're not going to get a commitment from him to keep the Jaguars in Jacksonville. What they're going to get is what happened this year. The NFL simply determined that nobody's going to play overseas because of the pandemic, so you get your two extra games. But as soon as this is up and over, the Jaguars are going to play, going to be back in London again for those two games. There is nothing anybody around here is going to be able to do about it. You know, one of the things that sticks out for me on this sweetheart deal is that $65 million loan that the city is going to, poised to loan him on a 50-year deal, as one president, I believe, has said, in the future, we'll all be dead. So I guess we shouldn't worry about the $65 million loan and how it's going to be paid back, because none of us will be around to see it.
You know, all four of my grandparents lived to be almost 100 years old. So I'm just going to push back a tiny bit there.
Well, I'll let them then make sure that they oversee getting this $65 million back into the pot. But it is just ridiculous. And one other thing, I'm sad to hear that he's selling the Kismet, because it is one of the greatest tourist attractions we have for downtown. if you haven't been by the Kismet and walked down there, it's right down there where the old Landing used to be. It is just tremendous.
It is. It's really something to see.
Start a fund drive to have NPR buy the Kismet, I think.
Oh my goodness. Okay, let's bring it back to the revenue discussion. AG Gankarski, I'm quoting Finance Committee Vice Chair Council Member Randy DeFore. She says she wants to see tax revenue from this Lot J deal provide enough of a return to the city to cover any revenue bond payments created by the hundreds of millions of dollars in city incentives that are, you know, let's be honest, they're likely to be approved by this city council, right?
Yeah, I mean, the consensus has always been manufactured. There are seven people on board already, including Council President Hazuri. It's going to be very difficult for there to be a rear guard action against this. You might see some poor amendments, some posturing. some things like that, but ultimately the deal's baked into the cake. I appreciated Fred's quote of John Maynard Keynes, the economist, in the long run we'll all be dead, because what we are seeing actually is Keynesian economics writ large, both nationally and locally. We're seeing this money created, and in the hopes that it generates the kind of economic vitality that we've seen in past eras. That remains to be seen. When I look at the Lot J deal also, I look at it as a save the whale effort for a franchise itself. And I say that because Governor DeSantis a few weeks ago was talking about NFL games in Florida, and he was saying something interesting about Jacksonville. He was saying that in Jacksonville, even with the limited seating, they couldn't sell it out because people were upset about something happening with the league. So that tells me that there is lower demand here than in some NFL cities, and this is very much a save-the-whale effort. If you want the franchise here, you're going to give Shad Khan his money. I think that's what it comes down to. Nobody's going to say it like that because nobody wants to hear Jacksonville is still a small town playing big city, but this is another example of it.
Right. Nobody wants to be the office holder who gets tagged with chasing the team out of town fairly or unfairly. There are certainly people who hold public office in the city are concerned about that. Okay, let's go to some calls now. It's our Friday roundtable. 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on the Lot J deal. Curtis on the north side. Go ahead, Curtis.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
My comment is this, guys. I think it's a tragedy. It should be unlawful that they can do this with that money. $65 million. When we got McCoy Creek, we got Riverside, we got Avondale, when it storms, it floods there. They've been telling us for years, and they've been just kicking this problem down the road. And it's not just Curry. It's every administration. It's time for the people to rise up and demand that it's our money. That money should first come to the city where we live in and not give it to somebody who really can't afford to do whatever you want to do. And look at this. One last comment. You're talking about a venue that they want to invest in that depends on people supporting it. Look at COVID. Nobody's going to go there if there's an outbreak. This is just the beginning of outbreaks. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Curtis. Tim Gibbons, taxpayer anger.
And this is going to be the interesting thing as we move forward on this. I think probably everybody on the panel today remembers the Better Jacksonville plan and the work that was done to truly bring the city on board with that expenditure of public money. As Claire said earlier, the idea that people are angry about this and they feel that maybe that money should be better spent elsewhere, I think they could be convinced. But if every discussion about it becomes you're opposed to the project, it kills any of that discussion. Rather than trying to find a way to do it that brings the entire city together, it becomes something that gets rammed through.
Jim in Riverside. Hi, Jim. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, I think we're all pretty weary about these incentives going to Shad Khan. And Shad Khan seems to be focused on just about everything except football. Why don't we put an incentive in these taxpayer handouts that every time the Jaguars loses a game, it costs Shad Khan $10 million in tax incentives? What do you think about that?
Jim, I appreciate the humor, although I think you're half serious there. Claire Goforth, until this pandemic hit, you had attended just about every Jaguars game, a season ticket holder. So as a longtime fan of the franchise, how personal is this for someone like you, a super fan?
Well, I mean, I love the Jaguars, and I want them to win every week, 16-0 would be an ideal season for me. But I think Jim gets to a point that a lot of people share, that Shad Khan is a brilliant businessman, and we can argue whether or not he's great at owning a football team. I think the record speaks for itself. But what are his real connections to Jacksonville? You know, I mean, now he's even selling the yacht that serves as his floating hotel when he's here. He doesn't own property in the city. He doesn't really seem to have relationships with people beyond transactional. There's really no roots that Shad Khan has established in the city of Jacksonville, whereas in other cities, the owners have a connection to the community. And, I mean, perhaps he felt that he got burnt on the whole OneSpark deal and some of the other things that just didn't really work out when he first came to town, when he was, you know, putting money around, and, you know, it just didn't, we'll just leave it at it didn't work out. But it's hard for people to feel a sense of connection to Shad Khan and to the projects that he wants, because it doesn't feel like he's one of us. It just feels like he sees us as an investment, you know, and he wants that ROI. It's not so much that he cares about the people. He just cares about the mighty dollar.
Okay. And let's be clear, the team has pushed back on that perception that I think you're right, Claire, a lot of people around town might have of Mr. Khan. They have repeatedly stressed he is committed to Jacksonville. But let's take a few more calls. Mark in Orange Park. Go ahead, Mark. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
There's a little tagline you said that somebody said that, you know, we need... You know, most team owners can't afford this business. They need this business and taxpayer incentive. Well, one of the few people that doesn't need that has got to be Shad Khan. He's a multi-billionaire. I think he said $8 million. I've heard $11 billion. He could write a check for this. So for him to, you know, come to the city, the middle class citizens of Jacksonville is just beyond monstrous to me. And also, I'd like to suggest, you know, he's going to, in a year or two, he's going to come to us and say, hey, you know, the Jaguar Stadium is one of the oldest in the league, and we really need a bigger, better one, and that's going to be $500 or $600 million, and apparently he has no compulsion about asking taxpayers for money, so I'm sure we're going to be hit up for that any time now. I think if this is a good idea, let's put it to the vote of the taxpayers. Yeah, we'll see how quickly that's voted up or down, and I have a much that it would be voted down quickly. This is just ridiculous. And all the other things that the city needs, and we're going to build a billionaire's development for him, it just is monstrous to me.
Thanks, Mark. You know, Fred, I think that there would be some frustration about this, even in a good economy. I think, though, that what has made this difficult politically is that we're in the middle of a global pandemic and a recession. Thousands around this community are out of work and struggling. The city has deep infrastructure needs and other bills to pay. So the amount that will be spent in this time that we're in, I think, is what makes it particularly eye-popping.
Well, there's no question about that. It's an onerous deal at a time in which people are concerned about other things. And we're in a city who simply should not be able to afford to do this to any private developer. Look, the 2,300 construction jobs that will be there will be from the same construction companies that have done work over and over again on different projects, who tore down the ramps already down there. And as for the jobs that will be there at the hotel, the boutique hotel that would come up, and the restaurants that will be in that place, will be the same hospitality jobs that pay less than $10 an hour, and they'll be in the same position that many hospitality workers are in right now if anything else comes up. It is just not going to, there statistically, there's nothing there that indicates that this project will be any more successful than anything else that has popped up in Jacksonville and around town. If the developer wants to take the risk, let the developer take the risk. I don't think many taxpayers will have any problem with some investment into the process, but look, the city already owns the land. We already own the land. He won't have to pay for being on the land. He simply should have to pay to put his dream on top of it. And that's part of the rub. And again, it goes back to the city council. I don't doubt that there are 10 votes already to go with this. But for those council persons who do not have constituents that are downtown, 7, 8, 9, Well, 7 has constituency downtown, but 8, 9, 10, 1, and 2, you really need to think twice about voting for this project that will not be beneficial to your constituents.
Lots of calls on the Lot J deal. Kevin in Mandarin. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yes, I am just amazed by the hypocrisy that we must have a free market when it comes to wages. Therefore, we cannot have a $15 an hour minimum wage. Yet when it comes to rich people, the free market just goes out the window and we'll subsidize whatever they choose.
Thanks, Kevin. A.G. Gankarski, is this deal corporate welfare, as that caller feels?
Americans for Prosperity, the conservative group, says it is. They think it's a giveaway deal that's happening at the wrong time. And there's very much a conservative counter-argument against these kind of incentives for billionaires' economic development. And as everybody on the panel said, I mean, Shad Khan does not have roots here. We are a subsidiary of Shad Khan Incorporated. That is the reality. Another question about this project is, it's a pre-pandemic vision. You know, the pandemic started in March, as far as we count it now. And, you know, since then, there's not been a lot of gatherings. And I know Governor DeSantis was saying, you know, pack them into the football stadiums and so on. But we don't have an indication there's real consumer demand for that yet. Maybe it will manifest by the time this project is built. But that being said, you know, the real open question is, why are Jacksonville taxpayers paying subsidized Shad Khan's vision? It'd be interesting if Michael Bender or St. Pete's Polls or somebody like that did a poll of this question, because, you know, the city council, as it stands right now, they're a quotable city council, but they're not a strong city council. And when push comes to shove and Shad Khan comes calling, they roll over like puppies at the pet store waiting to get adopted.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you mentioned UNF's polling operation, and I want to thank you for that, because we are going to move on and talk about
segue.
And talk about some other headlines from the week. It's our Friday roundtable. Join us at 549-2937. A new poll, speaking of polls, of all of you across Duval County, found some interesting data points this week. Joe Biden is ahead in Florida, according to UNF's polling lab. Local taxpayers say they would like to pay for better schools and are okay with a half-cent sales tax hike to do that. And crime is seen as this city's number one problem. Those are just some of the findings from UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Tim Gibbons, let's begin with you. Let's talk about the presidential race for a minute, because we watched the vice presidential debate the other night between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence. We're waiting to see if there's going to be a second presidential debate, which was supposed to be a town hall format in Miami. Then it was decided it would be virtual. Now we're not even sure if President Trump will participate in the debate. He's put out several statements shifting positions over the last couple of days. UNF has found that Joe Biden is up on Donald Trump 5 points here in Florida, but that does not necessarily mean Joe Biden's going to win Florida. We've all seen these polls before, and it could very well once again be a photo finish on election night in this state.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has, on either side, has any sense of, well, this is what the polls say. So, okay, I guess we know what's happening. You know, the next 25 days are going to be probably one of the craziest leads up to an election that has been seen. I think, and I'm sure AG and Claire and actually Fred as well, you know, all have thoughts on the politics of this, but it is interesting to see how Duval County has changed in its electorate. And it will be interesting to see what happens in Florida. You know, the one saving grace is the way they count votes here. If they don't screw them up, well, hopefully not, you know, but I mean, it's Florida, so that's probably never something to bet against.
Let's hope they don't, but you're right. Once the ballots start coming in, Florida immediately starts counting them, which means, Claire, we could have a result in this state on election night, unlike some other states that will be getting a crush of mail-in ballots and don't count them until the polls close. So Florida could be decisive. We'll see. At the same time, what do you think about the finding that local taxpayers probably aren't going to pull very high on the Lot J deal, but they are, by a big majority, willing to support a half-cent sales tax referendum for better public school buildings?
Well, that shows you what the citizens' priorities are. I think the citizens are more concerned with providing safe and effective learning places for children, which is why the schools, which are in desperate need of many repairs, what is the average age of Duval schools? 44 years. We want to see the investment in our city, in our city's children, more than particularly during a pandemic. We want to see this like flash and glitz sort of rendering, which I think we all know how this goes in Jacksonville. We see this really wonderful rendering. We all get very, very excited. And then we get something that looks sort of like an enlarged gas station. So, you know, I think the timing of the incentive is a big problem because of the pandemic, but, you know, we've been talking about the school's issue for several years now, and, you know, it's telling that even in the middle of a pandemic, Jacksonville is willing to open up its wallets for its children.
Yeah, Fred Matthews, that referendum is likely to pass. Let's talk about some other stuff that's on the ballot in Congressional District 4. It looks as though Republican incumbent John Rutherford is poised to win re-election in that district against Democrat Donna Deegan, according to the polling. That is a heavily Republican district. Mayor Lenny Curry and Sheriff Mike Williams, people were polled on their job performance. Let's see, Curry is at 47% approval, Williams now at 55% approval. And when we talk about law enforcement and race relations, the majority of voters in Duval County believe that white people and black people do not receive equal treatment by the police. So it's interesting to see that a majority of voters out there believe we need police reform, but at the same time, they approve of the job the sheriff is doing.
Well, those are interesting poll results that are there. I think the polling for Sheriff Williams and Mayor Curry will go up or down depending upon what the issue is. Mayor Curry has had a pretty peaceful time here since the JEA debacle has quieted a bit, and all of the chief players in that debacle have been pretty much dispensed with. All we're dealing with now is playing around the edges as to who's going to get indicted and who isn't. So that has played well to Mayor Curry's ratings. However, again, we always get this sort of thing. Just to go back to it, I mean, this deal with the Jaguars is something that could bring his numbers down a couple of knots. But again, hey, he's not facing re-election, so I don't think it worries him that much. And as long as we don't have any major police shootings here in Jacksonville, which we have not. I mean, they've released the body cam videos now from 6 months back, and all of the people that they've released video on appear to have even knives in their hands or they're acting crazy. So you can't blame the sheriff's office for that in the videos. So their numbers are doing pretty good. It is unfortunate that in the Congressional District 4 race, I say it's unfortunate, but it's not. It is an uphill battle for Democrat Deegan to try to turn the tide on independents. Most of her television ads are based around getting independents to vote for her. But it's always an uphill battle for Democrats in St. Johns County, Baker County, to get those Republicans to vote for a Democrat is just hard to do. We've even got a movement down there in St. Augustine among some of the black Democrats to have them to register as Republicans so that they will at least had a choice of someone to vote for that they would rather vote for in the primary and quite frankly, then try to get back over the line to vote for somebody like Deegan that they'd like to see there in the Democrats. So it's just difficult to do because there's such staunch Republicans in those districts.
Yeah, certainly true. St. Johns County and Congressional District 4, it's not only St. Johns County, but it encompasses part of St. Johns County. The demographics there are considerably different than what we're seeing in Duval County, especially in recent years. Duval has been trending more Democratic. Now, AG, what stuck out to you about this poll? According to Duval voters, crime is the most serious problem facing this city. That's a change from June when people said they were most concerned about COVID-19. Oh, I think we might have lost AG. Let's try to get him back.
I'm here.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it jibes and it tracks. I mean, we've had a national discourse about law and order, as the president puts it. We've seen protests in the streets. And, you know, COVID-19 has kind of become baked into the cake. I mean, you've got people going out more. We've got sort of a tacit embrace of the herd immunity property from certain people in office. So, you know, that shift is to be expected. I mean, there's a number of interesting things in that polling all the way around. I mean, I wanted to get to a couple of them. Deegan is actually even in the UNF poll with NPA voters. You know, UNF has her, you know, tracking down by 20 points, and that's a Republican advantage in that district, so that's good for her. And I also wanted to, you know, talk about the sheriff's performance, because when you look at the sheriff versus the mayor in the UNF poll, the sheriff is much better with Republicans. Curry's around 70%. Mike Williams is over 80%. And that tells me that Mike Williams may be in play for Jacksonville mayor in 2023, but also Donna Deegan. I don't think Donna Deegan's going to Congress, but if I look at somebody who just ran a real campaign and I'm a Democrat looking at 2023, I'm looking at Donna Deegan.
I think that's a smart assessment, and there are a couple of other people running for local office this cycle who may not win the office they're up for, but we won't necessarily have seen the last of them, just given the unique political climate we're in right now, this election year. You know, if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday roundtable. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. And AG, you touched on how the pandemic is just baked into everything we talk about, and that is affecting the retail sector. Regal Theaters shut down again temporarily this week. Movie theaters have been struggling in the pandemic. A new Whole Foods opened in Jacksonville Beach in the middle of a pandemic. At the same time, locally owned retailers have launched a Shop Jack's campaign. They're trying to push back against big box stores and stay relevant, stay open. Native Sun is one of the grocers that's doing this. They're offering special incentives and discounts if you buy locally sourced products and support locally owned restaurants. It's called Buy Local or Bye-Bye Local is the central message of the campaign. Tim Gibbons, you're our business editor. Basically, the locally owned retailers and grocers are saying, if you don't support us, we're not going to stick around.
It is a true fear. I mean, you have the idea that people are just not leaving houses. People don't want to congregate. I mean, we talk to boutique owners. We talk to grocery store people. You talk to just the range of retail out there. The big story in retail right now is e-commerce. It's transforming the industrial landscape. You have warehouses popping up everywhere because everybody is buying stuff online. And the people we talk to say that that is not going to go away after the pandemic. People have gotten used to the idea that, yeah, it's pretty nice to be able to just click a button and have it show up 2 days later. But if you're a local merchant, all you can depend on is the people around you. So the scary thing for many of them is the idea that, sure, sometime next year, we all hope that this gets back to something like normal, but something like normal might, A, be too late for them, and even then might not be the type of traffic that they need to survive.
Yeah. I mean, Claire, for the last 6 months or so, we've just been trying to get through each day, but this is simply a remarkable time we're living in, and we've sort of normalized all these awful things. You know, the movie theaters are closed. We've spent months hunkered down at home. Locally owned businesses are hanging on as best they can. The locally owned grocers are trying to stay alive when a new Whole Foods opens at the beach, and I like Whole Foods just fine. They are owned by Amazon, we should point out, so they have the backing of, you know, one of the world's wealthiest companies. But what I'm getting at is, this is just an unbelievably tough time for so many, and we try to talk about it in a dispassionate way, but I want to recognize that.
Yes, it really is. I mean, Jeff Bezos doesn't really need any more of our money. His wealth has increased throughout the pandemic because of the maneuvers on the federal level that have flushed the stock market with cash. And some may argue that is politically motivated to assist Trump in his reelection. That's just an opinion that some hold. But with the expiration of the PPP loan program, which provided a lifeline for many small businesses, they have been sort of left hanging for the past couple of months since that program ended. And the reality is the pandemic is far from over. Even if you do, as DeSantis would like, open up wide open, people are still concerned about the pandemic. Many people are still going to make a choice to stay home. It's not that they are told they have to. It's that they're afraid of a deadly disease that, as we're seeing around the country, the average daily cases are increasing, and many are believing that we're in the beginning of a second or third wave, depending on how you quantify that. If, as many believe, the number of coronavirus cases and deaths continues to rise throughout the cooler months, while people are, especially in the northern states, let and pushed back inside, we may see new rounds of closings and even more people staying home. And how is that going to affect these small businesses? The Whole Foods could probably stay open without a customer for years, and Jeff Bezos would be fine. Amazon would be fine. But, your corner market, a couple of months makes a huge difference. And while it's extremely convenient to shop at these large stores, if you do care about your community and you want to see these small businesses that provide such a richness of your experience survive, then you have to start making choices based on those values. I think that's what these small businesses are locally trying to make people realize, that every time you make a purchase, that's a decision over who you're going to support.
Follow the hashtag ShopJack so you can find a locally owned grocer or retailer like Native Son to support. And Fred Matthews, Congress still has not come to terms on another round of stimulus to help people that need a lifeline, to help small business owners that are right on the edge here. And unfortunately, they still cannot figure that out, which is simply head shaking.
It is unfortunate, but again, that's why leadership with a plan that is concerned, that encompasses all of the people that are involved, is so important. We have been floating around now for the last 10 months now without a concerted nationwide plan that would encompass what's going to be good for business, what's going to be good for folks who are most affected by this disease, and of course, the getting scientific progress going in a steady direction so that we can have more daylight at the end of this deep tunnel than we're seeing right now. And until we have a concerted effort, not this 50-state piecemeal effort that we have going on, plus territories, we're going to continue to see this unfortunate actions for businesses, large and small, having to take the heat for this sort of thing. Did I see the other day that Ruby Tuesday is declaring bankruptcy or getting ready to go out? Also, I like their salad bar, but they can't.
$5 on Tuesdays.
AG,
they can't keep it.
AG,
they can't keep it going with 25% capacity.
Even with the salad bar that is Fred Matthews approved, some businesses just can't get by in these times.
Just a quick note: there is a new PPP. Forgiveness form for small businesses in particular that the SBA has just finalized. So, Claire just mentioned that those loans, and we have details on that, but that will at least help with that paperwork part of the process.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, and check out the Jacksonville Business Journal, as Tim said, for coverage on that. With all of this serious news and all of this upset, I'm going to talk about something that just needs to be discussed.
No, not that.
I just couldn't let this go by because this just encapsulates what 2020 has been like all year long. Someone in Jacksonville decided to add an emu to the mix. Yes, this happened Thursday afternoon near Cassie Road on the west side. The best side! A wild emu was running around chasing people in that neck of the woods. We don't know who owns the emu. We don't know how it got loose. But the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission was called, along with animal control, to wrangle said emu. Native to Australia, emus are the largest living bird after the ostrich. They can get to be almost 6 feet tall and weigh 100 pounds. They run fast and can become aggressive. Sort of like our media roundtable participants. A.G. Gankarski, your thoughts on the wild emu?
Well, just as Mr. Khan doesn't comment on Kismet, I normally don't comment on the emus, but I would say that the emu has demonstrated a certain pluck. A certain pluck.
How long did it take to catch him? Does anybody know?
It's done before 5 o'clock news. We know that.
It was like a Monty Python
ahead, Fred.
Emu
Fred.
On the west side.
Fred, go ahead.
Where did he come from? I mean, did he take a boat here and somebody dropped him off and say, hey, this is your stop on? What? Emu?
Fred,
really?
That's my emotional support animal, and I don't appreciate you talking about him in this tone.
The Jaguars were evaluating him, and he escaped from, from the stadium.
Well, yeah,
was he defensive end.
Were they using him to practice, running drills, chasing after him maybe? Remember in Rocky when they would set the chickens loose and then, Burgess Meredith would have Rocky chase the chicken to see if he could catch it and it made him a better boxer? That could have
been kind of run like a former Jaguars running back. Damian Banks.
Go ahead, Fred.
All I know is we better not have an emu invasion around here, because that would mean that there's another emu around here that this guy, can we say guy, that this guy got with. And then we're going to have a run on emus all over North Florida. I mean, somebody's got to do something about this. This is ridiculous.
Well, not an ostrich, so nobody's
law and order.
Law and order. Go ahead.
Melissa, be careful. There's a fly in your hair.
Oh, oh my goodness.
Get it out.
If there's ever a fly that stays on my head that long, just somebody smack it off my head. Now, listen, you guys, we're all having fun and getting a little silly here, but I think that it's just because we've just reached the point where everything has gotten so absurd. It's like, you got to laugh to keep from crying. Tim, I mean, this is just, what do you even do with this?
Right. I mean, we obviously cover a lot of the working from home issues that arise, and people are looking for distractions, for things to just make life, more bearable. It sounds too dire, but, it is a very strange, time, and people are reacting in very strange ways.
If anyone knows, by the way, who owns this emu, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, because we just have this morbid curiosity about this. Okay.
Email.
That's right. We have 1 minute left, guys. Anything that caught your eye this week that we missed? AG.
I'm watching the stuff with the White House, specifically the 25th Amendment thing that Nancy Pelosi's talking about. It's going to be another hot day up there today.
Claire.
Back to the poll, I'm really curious to see what happens in the districts after the redistricting, when we redraw them after the next census. I think that's something that I'm really going to be following over the next year, couple of years.
Tim.
New CEO for the Comer. It's exciting to see what the museum's been doing over the past couple of years, and it will be very exciting to see, as they have this new person coming from Atlanta, what direction she takes it in.
And Fred.
It's unfortunate that the governor decided to fight against one more day of voting, since it is his system that broke down and didn't allow people to complete their voting online. It just stands out as one more way to hold to contain the vote
and
that's inevitably coming up.
Thank you all so much. Wonderful roundtable. Thanks, guys. We'll be right back.
Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congareeandpenn.com for more information.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Distracted driving is deadly. Teens, yes, but adults too, and there are millions more adults than teens. Arrive alive. Let's end distracted driving.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember Bob Gibson, one of the most dominating pitchers in baseball. He died last week at the age of 84. Gibson was an 8-time All-Star who was known for an intimidating fastball that kept hitters off balance. We'll hear part of an interview with Gibson and Hall of Fame outfielder Reggie Jackson about the battle between hitters and pitchers. Join us
this afternoon at 1 here on WJCT News 89.9.
This week on Science Friday, it's the War of the Worlds. Venus versus Mars. Which planet do you prefer? Which is more worthy of exploration and searching for life? Join us for a solar system smackdown, but without the chairs. On Science Friday, from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
A debate that raised the bar?
They are going to pack the Supreme Court.
If you have a pre-existing condition, they're coming for you.
Inside the White House, more staff are laid low, and America remembers a legendary guitarist who made millions jump. I'm Jen White. Join me for the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. The local nonprofit Jasmine is hosting its Coming Out Day breakfast next week. Like most events these days, it will be a virtual affair, but a powerful one too. Here is CEO Cindy Watson.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Melissa. Nice to be with you.
So tell me what's happening next week, because the annual Coming Out Day breakfast is a community tradition, and you're going forward with that, but this will be a virtual event. So what's on the agenda?
That's right. It's our 14th annual breakfast next week, and we'll have a really very dynamic program. We're super excited about our keynote speaker, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Jericho Brown will be speaking and reading his poetry from his most recent publication, The Tradition. He'll actually be interviewed by Dr. Richmond Nguyen from UNF. So it's a very dynamic conversation. We're really excited to hear a lot of the themes that they will cover around racial equity and health equity and what it means to be Black and gay in America today. We're on a virtual platform, so it'll be really interesting opportunities for folks to network. And so we're excited about that. And then we also are recognizing as our Diamond Award winner, and that's really our highest honor that we present every year in our award ceremony. We're recognizing local attorney Jimmy Midyet, who is a Jasmine alumni and has done many things in advocacy for the LGBTQ community in Jacksonville.
He's also, we should point out, a candidate for office for the clerk of courts position. So this is a timely event given that you're going to be talking about health issues and also identity issues. With the Black Lives Matter movement taking such prominence around the nation, your speaker, Jericho Brown, will be touching on some really timely topics.
He certainly will. He is has a very honest and reflective approach. He talks about his personal experiences as a Black man in the South, as well as a gay man, and just weaves a lot of the themes together. And he and Richmond have a very rich dialogue that we think really helps point the way forward for us in terms of the work we want to do with young people and for young people.
Yeah, I mean, when you started this Coming Out Day breakfast, it was a very different time than what it is today. It's come a long way is what I'm getting at, right?
It really has, Melissa. Back in 2007, we had about 120 people at the breakfast. at the UNF University Center then, and this year, last year we had over 800 people at the Hyatt. So it's a very popular event. A lot of our corporate partners who are sponsors and who partner here love to attend. It's a way for them to showcase their own commitment to the LGBTQ community and also the work that different companies in Jacksonville are doing around equity and LGBT equality. And so we'll have a chance for some of those top sponsors to showcase that in the platform, in the virtual platform that we're using. We're encouraging people to arrive, even though the program starts at 9 in the morning on the 14th, to arrive at 8:30 so they have time to venture through some of the spaces in the platform and see some of the innovative things that our corporate partners are doing around equity and equality.
And we should quickly mention, too, that Jasmine is providing health services around COVID-19, too. Yes?
We have been open since everything else closed down in mid-March. We've been continuing with some of our health services and our services to homeless youth. And because we have a strong partnership with the Department of Health, we do a lot of sexual health testing and screening and treatment. So we continue that, but included in that are some of our response around COVID-19 for our young people and in the community.
Okay, right. So with all of that said, how can people click on to the live stream and join the breakfast?
So everyone has to register to attend, and if you're not a part of a company that's already signed on, it's easy. You just go to our website at jasmine.org. And look for the email link. You email the Friends of Jasmine at jasmine.org, and we'll send you the information for the registration to log on.
Terrific. And that's jasmyn.org. And she is CEO Cindy Watson. Cindy, thanks.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Nice to talk with you. And I hope to see you at the breakfast.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep your feedback coming. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to tune in today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program connecting the entire Sunshine State as we discuss the biggest issues from all across this crazy place that we call home. A quick programming note, too. This show will go dark next week. We will be off Monday through Thursday. That is due to NPR's coverage of the Senate judiciary hearings on the Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett. So make sure to listen for those. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.